Shalom Aleichem, Mishneh Yomi, pre-recorded for Shabbat Re'eh, is wrapping up chapter 11 of Zivachim with Mishnayot 7 and 8. Echad Shebishel Bo, whether it's a utensil that was cooked in it. Now remember, we're talking about cleaning or breaking even the pots and pans and utensils used to cook kochim. So whether it's a utensil that was actually cooked in, a metal one, remember the earthenware ones we have to break. Echad She'eir L'Tochrotech, or they poured from the first pot a stream of hot liquid onto this second kli. Now, this is actually really important in Hilchot Shabbat. On Shabbos as well, the pot that's on the fire is called the kli rishon. But if somebody picked that up and poured that onto something else while it's still hot, well, that pouring, that irui kli rishon, that pouring out of the kli rishon, the same word here, eira, pouring out, has the power to cook at least the edges, the klipa of the item that it's poured onto. For more details, see the Shulchan Aruch, Orech Chaim 318 and section 10 there, and the Mishnah Brura, who says it does indeed cook kedei klipa lehalacha. So in our context here in Zevachim, well, they cooked up a stew of korbanot and then they poured directly from that pot into a bowl. Well, that bowl is also considered to have absorbed the taste of the holy offerings. The Mishnah adds, Echad Kodshim Kodshim, whether it's meat that's holy of holies, like a hatat, Echad Kodshim Kolim, or it's something like a shlamim that has lesser sanctity, Tonin Marika Ushtifa. It requires the purging, which basically hagala, boiling, and shtifa, and rinsing out. Of course, this was for metal kalim, the earthenware kalim that absorbed the taste of offerings must be broken. Rabbi Shimon adds, Kodshim Kolim Einan Tzurim Marika Ushtifa. It says, Kodshim Kolim do not actually require this process, only kodshei kodshim, according to Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Tarfon brings an interesting comment. Im bishol bo mitchilat regel. If they started cooking offerings at the beginning of the festival, they're bringing their shlamim when they show up to Yerushalayim for the festival, and then the next day too, they cook another shlamim in the same pot. So according to Rabbi Tarfon, yevashol bo et kol haregel. They could keep cooking in the same pot for the entire 7-day holiday, not on Shabbat, obviously, so 6 out of the 7 days, without doing the Mariko Shtifa, because Rabbi Tarfon holds that every time you're cooking in it with liquid, so the old tastes are coming out. So basically cooking something new in the same pot, according to Rabbi Tarfon, will remove the old tastes before they become nosar, left over, and you won't have the problem. So you could use it every single day. Chachamim Yomrim, the other sages disagree. They said, Od Zman Achila Mariko Shtifa. They said, when you're done with the time limit for eating, so for a shlamim here, it would be 2 days and the night in between. So whenever you're done with eating, well, you cooked a shlamim in here yesterday, so at the end of today, you will have to do Mariko Shtifa according to the sages. Now, what is this exactly? Mariko, the purging we're talking about, is Krikat Hakos, is like purging out a cup. And the cup we're talking about is the one we use for benching, for birkat hamazon, so that has to be washed inside. And the Mishnah notes, Marika, and there's a girsa bechamin, is done with hot, ushtifa betzonin, and the rinsing with cold. So the way we understand this is the Marika is done with hot water, like a hagala, like to absorb the taste that are absorbed in the pot, and then rinsing out whatever residue is inside. Though the Bartner is girsa, does not have the word chamin, so according to the Bartner, really, we're doing the hagala, and then we're rinsing the inside and the outside of the kli with cold water. The Mishnah adds hashvud. The shvud is like a metal stick that you use as a spit to roast things on the fire. Askala, and the askala, the Bartner says, is gridle balaz, like a griddle, like a grill, magilin b'chamin. So these things are used for grilling on the fire. They get hagala, that's boiling in hot water, to remove the taste there. Now, hagala works for the grill only for kodshim, so it's not nosar, but by kashrus, if a grill got trafed up, it would need libun chamer. It needs to be mamish, to be burned, to get white hot, to absorb whatever non-kosher taste is in there. Let's go on to Mishnah 8. Bishol bo kodshim v'chulin. In the same pot, they cooked up meat from offerings and non-sacred meat or potatoes or whatever it is. O kodshe kodshim v'kodshim kalim. Or chatas meat and shlamim meat that the kohanim are going to eat together. Im yesh behem benotein tam, if one of these meat flavors gives a taste to the entire dish, the entire mixture, hari hakolim, so even the more lenient ones, for example, the chulin, where there's normally no time limit, or the shlamim, which has a 2-day time limit, versus other kabbanot have a 1-day and night time limit, Necholim kachamorim. So those have to be eaten with the same time limit, the same stringencies, and the same location as the ones that are more strict, the kodshei kodshim, like the chatat. So if they cook the chatat together with a shlamim and some potatoes and carrots that were chulin, so only kohanim can, as long as you can taste the shlamim, as long as you can taste the chatat, so only the kohanim can eat it inside the temple courtyard only that day and the following night. So now the mission reads, "Ve'einan tunim rikashtifa." They don't need the purging and rinsing, "Ve'einan posim b'maga," and they don't cause issues of other food to be disqualified by touching it. And in the Gemara, they actually point out there's something missing. Because if something has absorbed the flavor of kodshei kodshim, it does definitely require mrika shtifa, and that flavor could be absorbed into other items. So really in the Gemara, they say the pots that you used for a mixture of kodshei kodshim, of chatas and other things, even chulin, do require mrika shtifa, but if there's not enough kodshei kodshim, not enough chatas to give any flavor, the taste is not noticeable in modern Hilchas Kashrus, we'd say it's less than 1/60th, it would not have a recognizable taste, then Einan Tunim Rika Shtifa. It would not require the rinsing, and it would not cause issues if that food touched something else. The Mishnah elaborates the issue of touching Rakik Shnaga B'Rakik. If the wafer of a mincha, and it was a problematic wafer, it had some sort of disqualification to it, and it was still hot, and it touched a normal kosher wafer that the Kohanim were about to eat, which would make some of the taste of the disqualified one be absorbed into the other one, or v'chaticha b'chaticha, one slice of hot meat from a problematic korban, a disqualified offering, touched a normal piece of meat that was about to be eaten, and since it was hot, it could transfer the taste to the normal one. So in such a case, lo kol rakiki, not the entire wafer of the mincha, v'lo kol achaticho, and not all of the slices of meat, asurin, are problematic now due to being touched by a hot, disqualified, problematic offering. Eino asur ele makom shebola. It's only forbidden the place of that item, that loaf or wafer of mincha, or that slice of meat or cut of meat, only where the problematic one actually had physical contact, and the taste of the problematic item was absorbed into the good one. That's what we would have to remove and not eat, but the rest of it would still be edible. Yashukohachem, good Shabbos.